Everybody ready? Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to convene the April 18, 2017 meeting of the Subcommittee on Natural Resources of the Joint Ways and Means Committee. This afternoon, we're going to be doing additional public hearings regarding the Department of Forestry. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5519. And we have a list of people here who've indicated they would like to testify. If folks could keep it to about 3 minutes, I think that would work.
Yeah, 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah. So, folks, if when you come up and testify, if you could limit yourself to 3 minutes, that would be exceedingly helpful, and then we should be able to get through the entire list. And I'm going to call up first the folks who were unable, because we ran out of time, to testify the last time. I'd ask, please, that we got three chairs.
Two.
I'd like to call up, please, Ralph Saperstein and Dylan Cruz. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome to our subcommittee.
Kick it off, Ralph.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Ralph Saperstein. I'm appearing before you today on behalf of Boise Cascade. Boise Cascade has a little over 2,000 employees in Oregon, but we do not own any of our forest land. We rely on private forests, state forests, and federal forests for our raw material supply. We support full funding for the Department of Forestry for their fire program and administration of the Forest Practices Act by their stewardship foresters. This is a very confounding issue because the governor's recommended budget eliminates some service forester positions. And those jobs are necessary for private landowners to be able to manage their forest land. But the real irony is that there's people in this building, not in the room, that want the timber industry to pay more in taxes. And by reducing the service forestries, you're walking away from $1 million in tax revenue that we would pay. And it's just confounding to think that we would leave that $1 million on the table and not implement a plan that could help private forest landowners manage their lands. Today, I'm seeking your support for the department's budget package number 381, the Federal Forest Restoration POP. The POP can address the severe fire danger in our forests in southern Oregon and northeast Oregon on the national forests. This POP will provide funding for forestry's important work to increase the pace and scale of forest restoration projects on the national forests in Oregon. Oregon has signed an agreement with the federal government under Good Neighbor Authority. Good Neighbor Authority was established in 2014 in the Federal Farm Bureau. The purpose of the Good Neighbor Authority is to get cooperation between the states, the federal government, and Oregon is one of the few states to sign an agreement. And the important thing about that is that when we do forest restoration projects under Good Neighbor Authority, the revenue from those projects goes back into the forest for more restoration projects. So this POP, it'll provide funding to increase the pace and scale including the Good Neighbor Authority. But most importantly, when timber is harvested under this POP, or the Federal Forest Restoration Program, from any source, Oregon benefits. We benefit from the employment and family wage jobs from the timber harvesting and the manufacturing of wood products. the general fund benefits from the income tax that people employed in the industry and family wage jobs pay. And as the forest health improves, companies like Boise Cascade, we can increase our manufacturing wood products for the folks. And this general fund increase from income tax revenue, it really is not just a win-win-win. It's a win-win-win-win situation. We're improving forest health, improving employment, improving the markets for our products, and the general fund increase improves. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I think we'll hold questions until both of you have had an opportunity to testify. Dylan, welcome.
Great, thank you very much. Chair Frederick, Chair Witt, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dylan Cruz. I'm the Policy Director with Sustainable Northwest. We are here today in support of Policy Option Package 381, the Federal Forest Restoration Program. A lot has been spoken about this program and its benefits already, and so today I just wanted to add a little bit more nuance to what's already been discussed here. Part of the reason why Sustainable Northwest is such a strong supporter of this program is because of its commitment to monitoring, transparency, and accountability as far as how those funds are spent and what outcomes are derived from those state investments in federal forest management and collaboration. To just step back and talk about how these funds are actually allocated to the ground, 70% of the funds in this package actually go towards implementation. And when we think about how to invest those dollars, Oregon Department of Forestry actually reaches out to partners, to the Forest Service, to collaborative groups, to the industry, environmental community, and asks, how should we spend these dollars? So there's a lot of transparency and input that goes into these investments. There's also a monitoring protocol that is very strict that tracks environmental, economic, and social outcomes of these investments. That criteria was developed in partnership with third parties by the agency with those groups on the ground. It's monitored annually to actually determine the outcomes and the outputs of those investments. And then we actually have third-party monitoring that occurs at the University of Oregon at the Ecosystem Workforce Program. In 2015, they released a comprehensive review of the program's effectiveness and its outcomes, and we'll get our second release of the report here in June of 2017. So it does have a rigorously monitoring protocol. To just hit on a few benefits that we have seen from the program to date, and I have detailed numbers in my testimony, but we've seen a 16% increase in restoration jobs and a 14% increase in federal timber harvest since this program's inception. 63% of acres with signed Forest Service NEPA decisions on the east side have incorporated input from collaborative groups. Since 2009, the average NEPA decision area with collaborative involvement is 24,000 acres on the east side. It's just 10,000 without it. And collaboration has contributed to a 45% increase in annual average of acres with signed NEPA decision between 2012 and 2015 compared to 2009 to 2011. We're getting bigger, we're going faster, and it's more complex. And it's not just the east side. If we look statewide and in western Oregon, in the past 2 years alone, ODF seasonal employees have assisted with marking unit boundaries and tree marking on 54 timber sales on 8 national forests and 1 BLM district. This has resulted in 275 million board feet of timber statewide, including an increase in the annual timber target on the Willamette National Forest by 10 million board feet. That's additionality, that's results, that's clear outcomes that we're tracking. This program's working. There's a reason why other states are following our lead, including Washington, Idaho, and Montana. Oregon set the pace. Let's stay in the lead. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For either one of you, there's a resolution floating around regarding the ONC lands right now, and I'm curious to understand maybe your perspectives about whether, and I know we're dealing with a different agency with ONC, but just theoretically, is there any reason why we couldn't try to apply the same sort of methodology to managing those ONC lands if we could get federal cooperation?
The ONC lands are special. They are driven by a different piece of legislation, the ONC Act of 1937, and judges have interpreted that act to say that those lands should be managed for timber dominant for the 18 ONC counties. So the collaborative process that we've talked about, that we worked through, it doesn't fit those lands. The resolution is to Congress to get them to come up with an aggressive management plan for the 2 million acres in Western Oregon, which are very productive forest lands, and they haven't been producing sustainable yields or revenue for the counties. So I don't think this program is appropriate for ONC lands.
Chair Witt, Chair Frederick, Representative Helm, I would agree with Ralph's comments about the complexities on the ONC land, certainly, and questioning, you know, the appropriate use of these dollars and how we want to use the state investment. The only piece that I would add is that the Good Neighbor Authority Agreement that the state of Oregon did sign also included the Bureau of Land Management. There's nothing that precludes the state from actually investing in collaboration on ONC forests or investments on those lands, as well as carrying out treatments on the ONC forests. It is true that they have a different mandate, and we need to think carefully about using those resources, but we have been investing on one BLM district already. We could do more if that was a choice that the legislature and parties agreed on.
Mr. Chair, if I could say one. I just observed that, you know, one of the, from my perspective, as somebody who's watched the struggles in trying to unlock federal lands to be appropriately and sustainably harvested, the NEPA issue is the big one. And here the collaborative process has unlocked that in my mind to a large extent and been successful. If we don't take that into account in how we want to manage these ONC lands, we're going to end up with the same unsuccessful results that we've had for the last 35 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Helm, that's probably true, but there's another party involved that's not the ONC counties have been very active on this issue, and they might have different view of how NEPA ought to apply.
Additional questions, anyone? Ralph, you said something at the very, very beginning of your testimony that caught my attention.
Mr. Chair, is that what I said? No.
And it was the comment that you made was that Boise does not own any of their own timber.
Right.
And I remember a time when Boise Cascade was one of the most responsible timber owners around. And I remember specifically one summer when there was relatively high fire danger. And there were a lot of forests that had burned in northeast Oregon, and Boise had one fire that whole season that I think burned 10 acres, suggestive, I think, of some very good forest stewardship. But anyways, I digress. Unless it's proprietary information, if it is, I respect that. But I suspect there might be a story behind the fact that Boise no longer owns any of its own timber.
The story is the same for all timber companies, that because of federal tax situation, companies have divested their forest land. And except for small Oregon companies, we don't see large corporations that have forest land and manufacturing plants. So it's a conundrum that hasn't been resolved, but it is no longer profitable to have both. And if you're interested in how Boise Cascade managed our forest land so we didn't have fires, an upcoming witness now works for the owner of those Boise Cascade forest lands. He's a forester that could explain to you how Boise was able to do that.
Very interesting. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your testimony. I'd like to call up next, please. Bear with me, folks. Tom Wolfe and Kathleen Brennan Hunter, please.
I thought so too.
Looking at us. Why is he looking at us?
Good afternoon to both of you. And welcome.
Exactly. I thought he wasn't going to be back.
So, yeah, that's right. Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, it occurs to me, and my name is Tom Wolf. I'm here representing Travel Limited, that a week ago I announced that last week at the Water Resources Department, that was the last time I was ever going to testify on a Natural Resource Agency budget, and apparently I was wrong. So, partially that's not my fault because I forgot that we backpedaled this. So think of this as the film Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, where at the end of it they had like four different endings. Well, this is the second ending, so hopefully it's the last ending. But, you know, this is where, you know, the Sam Gamgee walks back to the house and tells his wife that, you know, whatever they did. So consider this their ending. So in now moving on to the testifying, Trout Unlimited supports the proposed ODF budget, SB 5519. We think that everything that they asked for is warranted and needed. We ask that you look at it and not give a specialized priority to conservation programs that ODF does, both on private forests and within their state forests, but you look at those programs. And obviously fighting fires is very important to the state forestry department, but we ask that you give the same amount of priority to all the conservation programs, and that whether it's working with the federal forests or with the private forest stewardship programs, that these get adequately funded and that their needs be met. Lastly, we just want to talk about in the future. Early in this program, ODF had a POP that would address some of the recreational needs of the state forest, because currently we have about 800,000 acres of state forest in the state. Half of that, or over half of that, 500,000, is in the Tillamook-Clatsop, which sits a half hour to an hour away from the close to a million people that live in Washington County and unincorporated Washington County areas and cities. That currently, as people move in, they're going to need areas to recreate. And we ask that in the future, probably not now, but we look seriously at making sure that Department of Forestry gets adequate funding so that they can take that 500,000 acres of Clatsop and Tillamook State Forest and adequately protect the streams, of course, but also look at ways to continue to add campgrounds, to build trails, and make sure that people within our growing state, because Washington County, and I can assure you, living in Hillsborough, it's a very fast-growing county, can have places to recreate, because we've asked within their mission of the Department of Forestry take this on, yet we have not given them adequately enough funding to do this. So we ask that in the future that this not be shortchanged. I understand why that was pulled from this year's budget, but we ask in the future that you do this, because if I may say this, knowing that this truly is the last time I'm going to testify before you on a state budget, that you look to this department, who has done way above what they're asked to do in all their duties, that you adequately fund them and make sure that in the future they have the funding to carry out not only forest harvest, forest conservation, but also forest recreation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, Chair Frederick, my name is Kathleen Brennan-Hunter, and I'm the Director of Conservation Programs for the Nature Conservancy in Oregon. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I wanted to speak to two elements of the budget that's in front of you. First, I wanted to provide additional support for testimony that you heard in the first public hearing, which was submitted by Marla Ray. The governor's recommended budget includes $650,000 to support Oregon's Rangeland Fire Protection Associations. We think that's an important investment, and it supports rapid response to Oregon's rangeland fires. So I wanted to express our support for that. I also wanted to express our strong support for ODF's Federal Forest Restoration Program, the FFRP, that you've already heard about today. This is a very forward-looking program. It brings management of federal lands into state purview. It's opened opportunity for the state to use the Good Neighbor Letter, Good Neighbor Authority, you heard about earlier today. This program is recognized nationally for its innovative approach and investments in federal forest management. And The U.S. Forest Service is rewarding that. And as a result of this investment, within just the current biennium, an additional $13 million has been invested to support work on hazardous fuels and fire reduction risk. I wanted to also share with you that an economic analysis that was completed by the Oregon Forest Resources Institute demonstrated that for every $1 million invested in federal harvest, there's another $5 million multiplier effect that benefits the economic and social services in Oregon's rural communities. We think that's really important. So in conclusion, I wanted to express our strong support for the $4.4 million of funding that's currently in the budget for the FFRP program. Thank you.
Thank you. Subcommittee members, anything for this panel? I'm not seeing anything. Thank you both very, very much. I'd like to call up next, please, Susan Jane Brown and Nick Smith. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Welcome to both of you.
If I might, I have two colleagues here that I would love to have join me up here. They're also on the list to testify. Or I could let this gentleman go first.
Could we have you two, and then we'll have the other two?
Sure.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, and members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Nick Smith, representing Portland-based American Forest Resource Council, an association of milling and logging companies in five western states. In Oregon, we monitor 18.2 million acres of federally owned forest lands, and we promote the active management of these public forests to provide social, economic, and conservation benefits. We've submitted written testimony in the form of a letter co-signed with others in the Oregon forest products industry. I'll just emphasize a few key points. We share the concerns about the proposed reductions to ODF's budget, especially those that are critical to the agency's mission and the health of forests of all ownership types. We urge the legislature to prioritize and sustain ODF's key personnel, firefighting, and technological capacity, including stewardship foresters. I primarily want to speak to the Federal Forest Restoration Program, not to oppose it, but to offer a perspective. Certainly, AFRC staff and member companies are frequent participants in forest collaboratives and will continue to invest our own time, energy, and resources into making collaboration work. But if the legislature is going to continue to invest state resources on federal projects, we recommend that FFRP dollars should first be prioritized and invested to bolster and grow good neighbor authority projects between the U.S. Forest Service and the state. Idaho's GNA program, for example, capitalized on one-time private and state investments to grow state management capacity, increase outputs from Forest Service lands, and generate excess revenues for the state government without negatively impacting the state budget nor the mission or the work of the Idaho Department of Lands. If ODF is compelled to invest beyond GNA projects, limited state dollars would be best invested in federal projects that create additionality, including measurable outcomes above and beyond federally funded targets and metrics. Principally, state investment shouldn't be used to fill federal funding gaps or replace federal funding responsibilities. State investments should grow Forest Service outcomes and outputs, not replace them. We urge the legislature to provide clear guidance to ODF that all FFRP investments be tracked at the project level to ensure state dollars contribute to well-defined metrics. The metrics should track the direct effects of state investments, not just the amount of Forest Service work that has some state involvement. Our joint letter suggests a few metrics for you to consider, chiefly there to ensure that state investments moving forward result in added private sector jobs, added volume, and added outputs that tangibly increase the pace and scale of treatments on federal lands. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Susan Jane Brown. I'm the program director for the Wildlands Program with the Western Environmental Law Center, where I'm also a staff attorney. And I am also on the board of directors of the Blue Mountains Forest Partners, and I'm a member of the Wallowa-Whitman Forest Collaborative. Thank you both, chairs, today for the opportunity to testify. Thank you for that. You've heard a lot so far about the Federal Forest Restoration Program. You've heard a lot of facts and figures, and I'm here today to provide a little perspective in terms of the more non-tangible benefits of this program. It's important to note that as we look to increasing the pace, scale, and quality of forest restoration on our federal lands, that that doesn't simply happen overnight. It takes a lot of hard work, and I'm here to tell you and show you that collaboration is a way to achieve those objectives, increasing pace, scale, and quality of federal forest restoration. And what we've been able to do on the Malheur National Forest with the Blue Mountains Forest Partners, and what we hope to be able to accomplish on the Wallowa-Whitman Forest as well, is to bring together groups of diverse interests and stakeholders that have frequently in the past been at loggerheads around federal forest management. By bringing people together and spending time, preferably out in the field, and talking about these issues, we found that we've been able to come to agreement, which buys you that social agreement, the social license, to actually increase that pace and scale. And the Federal Forest Restoration Program has done that in two important ways that I would like to share with you. One is by providing extra capacity for facilitation with these collaborative groups. You'd often like to think that as adults, we could come together and have a productive, respectful conversation about tough natural resources issues. But in fact, oftentimes, we need a neutral third-party facilitator to help us with those conversations. And the Federal Forest Restoration Program provides funding for that facilitation. The other thing that I'd like to bring your attention to is that it has provided technological assistance to collaborative groups, whether that is publications or, in our case, providing scientific expertise. So allowing collaborative groups to reach out to respected members of the scientific community, both internal to the Forest Service and the BLM, but also external to perhaps educational organizations like Oregon State University, University of Washington. I know that's across the border, but allowing us to tap into some scientific expertise. And what we found with the Blue Mountains Forest Partners is that by having third-party collaboration and facilitation and also having scientific expertise, it allows collaborative partners to really learn together and to grow together, to share information together. And when we have found that by doing that, we've actually increased our understanding of how the forest works and how forest management can influence local economies and communities. And again, that agreement, which is a little bit difficult to quantify, is actually the glue that brings these groups together and allows us to have conversations. It's that conversation and agreement around what these forests need that has allowed us, again, to increase the pace, the scale, and the quality of restoration. So I urge you to support this program for the next biennium, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you both very much. Subcommittee members. Nick, you mentioned a set of metrics that you would like to see in terms of outputs from the forest and the not trying to put words in your mouth, but I think the cooperative arrangement. Have you put down on paper what those metrics are?
We suggested a few in the letter that we've submitted to the committee.
If you get a chance sometime, I'd be interested in learning more about those from you.
Okay, I'd be happy to follow up with your office.
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Senator Girard, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. This is for Nick as well. Dollars are tight this budget. I think everybody realizes that. And we're having to make really tough decisions. If you had to choose between 33 firefighters for fire suppression versus increased money for collaboratives, which would you prefer?
Co-chairs, Senator Girard, that's a very difficult question, and I'm glad I'm not the one making that decision. Yeah, certainly in my testimony, I urge the committee to really do what it can to protect the Oregon Department of Forestry and its programs and services that are critical to its mission. And so, you know, certainly I would look to, you know, protect stewardship foresters, firefighters, and whatnot. You know, my recommendation here today is that, you know, as the legislature has allocated millions of dollars to projects on federal lands, and as you look to do it in the future, that these state resources, you know, result in additionality that you know, results in, you know, protecting our forest products infrastructure and results in healthier forests.
I'm fine.
All right.
I'll give him a pass.
With that, I want to thank you both very, very much. And Ms. Brown, I know you you brought a couple of people with you, and I'm proof positive that if you wait long enough, everybody shows up at the Capitol. Bruce Doc Savage, it's great to see you. And I think you had someone accompanying you as well.
Distinguished. Actually, I came on my own.
All right.
Thank you.
Very good. Welcome to you both.
Would it be a huge breach of protocol if I stood up?
I think that's perfectly fine. We get tired of sitting down all day long, too. So,
well, I can't speak with my hands unless they're moving.
Okay.
Can I go first, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Okay.
Anyway. Welcome to our subcommittee. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Boyd Britton. I'm a county commissioner in Grant County.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you all, and thank you for having us. Just a quick little background. You've heard all the facts and figures, and I'm not going to bore you with them, but this collaboration stuff, it's tough work. Okay, the very fact that we're sitting here together, Susan Jane and I met her in 2003. We went to a forest plan, federal forest plan, okay, and it was it's still going on. That was in 2003. And we walk in there, and it's in Portland, by the way, for the Blue Mountain Forest. Okay, it's in Portland. So we walk in there, and there's this lady sitting in the back, and I asked some of the guys, well, frankly, I said, who the hell's that? And that, well, that's Susan Jane Brown. And who is Susan Jane Brown? She's the one that kicks our butt in court all the time. Collaboration is working for us. It's been a tough slog. We haven't been sued in over 8 years. Our federal forest targets and output has gone from 8 million or 8 or 10 million, lucky to get that without a lawsuit, up to 75 million. We haven't been sued in 8 years. And a lot of that, the big part of that, is because of collaboration. We're getting more money from the feds, and this project for Oregon Department of Forestry has been so good. Oregon is actually showing the federal government how to get it done. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud to be in Grant County now. And our federal forest there used to be a dumping ground. That's where they would send people to get rid of, well, not get rid of them, but to put them gently to pasture. And you can ask Mr. Storm about that. They just hid them there. Now it's a place to come. Okay, we're getting stuff done, and I'm really, really proud of it. I think this group should be proud that they're supporting that, and I would ask you to continue it. And, for example, you know, we're talking about economic development. Our mill, Mr. Doug Savage and his group, they've increased. They were going to go away. They really were. But because of the collaborative, we had the opportunity to bring a lot of people together, and the state helped. Russ Holflake from the Nature Conservancy, everybody came together. Senator Wyden, Congressman Walden, we came together to help save them. And now we still have a mill, and they're doing well. And we also, you know, the stewardship stuff goes, you know, also to Boise Cascade as well, and I think to Interfor as well. And there was a political price to pay for that, for me. Okay, just so you know, we're all about politics, or at least y'all are. The stewardship wasn't initially very popular, and there were some folks that weren't happy with it. And there was a recall that came out after that. But fortunately, the people of Grant County turned it back 2-1, and so we're still doing it. But it is a tough slog, and I commend you for your good work. I would just ask you to continue that work, and I would welcome any questions, and I will sit down for the questions.
Thank you very, very much, Commissioner. Appreciate it.
Sir?
Yes.
I will answer your question. Can I?
Sure. Go for it.
It's all about forest health. And if we can increase the size of these collaboratives, move them forward, you know, I know it's going to be tough. You guys are going to be the ones making the decision, thank the Lord, for those 33 firefighters that you talked about. But if we can increase the health of our forest, you know, not only state lands, but private lands and federal lands to diminish the effect of catastrophic wildfire, sir, that if I was in your position, it would be an easy choice. I mean, it'd be tough, and I'd hate to be the one to be telling those folks that, but I'm gladly answering that question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bruce, great to see you again. Welcome.
It's good to see you, Representative Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, members of the committee. My name is Bruce Doc Savage. I'm the president of Ochoco Lumber Company. Ochoco Lumber was formed in the 1920s. We are one of the oldest continuously owned wood products companies west of the Mississippi River. Unlike Boise Cascade, we also own a small fraction of the forest land. I guess it's because we don't make any money, so we don't have tax problems. But in any event, we have a sawmill in John Day, Oregon, a biomass facility in John Day, and a few acres of timberland. I happen to live in Deschutes County. Our so-called corporate headquarters are in Crook County, and our sawmills and lands are in Grant and Harney County. Now, this is very significant to me, and I'd like to give you some real examples of why I believe the ODF Forest Restoration Program has had a profound effect on the economies of our selected counties.
Should Can you I move back just
move
a
back
little bit?
Yeah,
you're popping your peas on that. So,
okay. In Deschutes County, led by the Federal Forest Working Group Collaborative, there was a project called the West Bend Project, and there were treatment on about 14,000 acres. Some saw timber was removed, but for the most part, it was a forest health project. And why is this important to Deschutes County? Because there's a reduction of, there's no question there's been a reduction of wildfire and good smoke management processes. There's no secret that skiing and biking and golfing and fishing and hiking are a major part of our economy. We are currently seeing an emergence in an industry, a new industry. It's an outdoor products industry in Deschutes County. Crook County, perhaps no other county has suffered more in U.S. Forest Service harvest reductions than Crook County. When I started in the wood products industry 35 long years ago, we had five sawmills in Prineville. There are no sawmills today. We are attempting to revitalize through the work of the collaboratives new efforts to reinvigorate investment in our forests. We're looking at something a little different, something to do with the wood products that are not saw logs, the biomass products. Through investment with the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Families, based out of South Carolina, a large endowment, $300-400 million, they have invested $3.5 million into a process called torrefaction. We want to bring that to Crook County, to Grant County. Now, the only reason they're looking at investing these kind of dollars on a national level at our local level is because of the collaborative effort. The processes that we go through are huge investments. And we believe that this is going to be a great location for investment. Now, to Grant County, where we are well represented with our collaboratives, we have a biomass facility. We've invested somewhere in the neighborhood of $10 million to try to find a way to handle that small wood. It's tough. Stewardship contracting produces very small material. Small ponderosa pine is hard to manufacture. It's difficult to sell, and for the most part, the markets for the finished product are no longer in Oregon. They are elsewhere, and so now we've got an increase in our production costs. But it's a living, and we're squeezing by, and we hope to further invest. And finally, I just would like to tell a real quick story about an experience that I had just recently. I had the opportunity of traveling back to Washington, D.C., I was with a group from Oregon to talk to legislators back in D.C. about the Oregon plan. This is a plan that most of you I know are very familiar with. The business community, local leaders, city and county officials, administrators have gotten together and come up with a plan for Oregon, a business plan. We were in Washington, D.C. to educate our legislators on where our state is going. Our priority agenda had to do with international trade and health care and Medicaid and wildfire funding, a real problem in the state of Oregon, state of Washington, where basically funds are divested, taken away from good forest management, and we're fighting fires with them. That's not the way to go, in my humble opinion. I was able to speak directly with the U.S. Forest Service representatives who control and have the discretionary expenditures to invest in various communities communities throughout the United States. They looked at Oregon as a good place for investment because of our collaborative efforts, our federal forest working groups. We can take our dollars, similar to other types of state dollars that are used to leverage federal dollars, to get those dollars to our state. The payback is huge. They are very committed to the state of Oregon, to our collaboratives, to get the work done. If you have any questions, I would be more than happy to answer.
Co-Chair Frederick. Co-Chair Frederick, excuse me, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thank you. I'm curious about turning points. Where you saw the turning point? What was it that really really stood out in terms of the collaboration? Because you're doing an incredible job on the east side, but we still have some struggles with the strength of the collaboratives on the west side and in the south. So I'm just curious whether you have any words of wisdom on how we can do that kind of thing.
We were very, very fortunate in that, in fact, I even have the article with me today. In December of 2009, Senator Wyden brought together members from the environmental community in Washington, D.C., and from the timber industry to bring to really start and kick off the collaborative process as we were going into a deep dive in our industry. And we were getting nowhere. With his leadership, we were able to bring together this concept of collaboration. On the east side, the issues are a little bit easier to deal with. And I think that has something to do with the issues, the problems, and the fact that in a lot of locations, collaboratives aren't working as well as they are on the east side. But we also hit rock bottom. We do not have the ONC lands, which are controversial. We have no Department of Forestry lands. And this is why this rural, we'll call it a rural-urban divide, or the difference between the east side and the west side exists. We like to get, as my good friend here would say, a fraction of the action, a little bit of the dollars invested through these programs on the east side. I think you hit rock bottom, and from there people decide that it's in everyone's best interest to come together. But it was the leadership of Senator Wyden and the strength of Congressman Walden that really did it for us. So it was a very high level. And of course, our Governor Kitzhaber strongly believed in this program. And this is why I'm here for the third time in a row. So,
very good.
Can I address it a little bit,
yes,
sir?
Yes, please.
I'm not usually the touchy-feely type, but that's what it's all about. It's human relationships. I mentioned Susan Jane. She has come. She's got to know our community. Hell, she's bought a house there. She's lived. They have two houses now, but she wants to be a part of Grant County, and it was tough. And we had a logger there that unfortunately Charlie passed away. Did he put all this together? He was able to put back his prejudice and his feelings and say to the environmental, Tim Lillibo, Susan Jane, come on, we'll show you what we're doing. And he did. And that's where it all started. It was, sir, it was tough in the beginning. And it's still tough right now. But that's where it's about human relationships. Trust is where it began.
One final, if I may, Co-Chair.
And gentlemen, if when you change speakers, just so that the record that's made of our discussion here, if you would re-identify yourselves just for the record, so that a century from now, folks know that it was either Mr. Britton or Mr. Doc Savage?
This is Mr. Doc Savage.
Thank you.
There was a question earlier by my good friends in the industry regarding metrics on how well the Federal Forest Working Group is working. We've got those metrics.
They are
very well developed. It's a great track, and this is a requirement of the group. So I can remember Senator Johnson pointing a finger at me and said, "You better prove that these investments work." I believe this is part of that proof, and we can leave this with you, Mr. Coach.
Appreciate that very, very much. Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think when we get to the realization on both sides that a healthy forest is a good forest and it's beneficial not only to the environment but also to the people that live in the state of Oregon as well as the industry that we once had that was a great industry. I pull green chain at night at Kogap Manufacturing in 1970, made $3.74 an hour, which doesn't sound like much, but it got me through college. But today, if with an inflation calculator, that's $23.50 an hour. That's a pretty good wage. But today, you can't find a job like that because all the mills that I grew up with are gone. But today, I'm seeing a decaying of our forests. And the only thing we're building is a big bonfire, and we need to take care of those forests. We need to groom those just like a crop. It's just like a wheat crop. You plant it, you groom it, you harvest it, you plant it, you groom it, and you harvest it. And that's what we need to do in this state. We have to come to that realization with both sides of the issue.
Amen.
Amen. Anything further for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you both very, very much, and we'll look forward to receiving those metrics, too. Thank you.
Thank you for your time, all of you.
Appreciate the considerable distance that both of you have come to testify to. Thank you. I'd like to call up now, please, David Hampton and Neil Schroeder.
Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs Witt, co-chair Frederick, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm David Hampton, and prior to popular belief, there are people that have fully integrated forest products companies, and we are one of them. We own sawmills, timberland, and we have a lumber sales company. I started this in about 1986, working down in with the West Oregon Forest Protective Association. And way back when, we used to talk about how we were going to move cats around and where people were going to go and, you know, what kind of resources we could put out there. It's been an incredible experience to watch how the budgets have slowly gotten tighter and tighter. And to your point about the timber that's out there that needs to be harvested, it's like sitting on a freezer full of beef and saying that you're starving. We have a fantastic ability here in this state to manage this timber and do a fantastic job. We have a contract, the BLM has a contract with ODF that's based on sufficiency. You have a unique and one-of-a-kind insurance policy that the ODF has with the Lloyd's of London. But it's all based on what is called the complete and coordinated system. So if the ODF budget is cut, then that complete and coordinated system will no longer be complete and or coordinated. We own our own fire trucks to protect our private forest lands, and we had a fire on our property not too long ago, a couple years ago. We had about 50 guys show up from different companies that just wanted to get there and to help out. It's that important that we show up. The ODF guys are right there, hand in glove with us every single day when this stuff goes on. We have training that we do. We have them come out and tell us what we should do, what's important for safety, and how to be more efficient in initial attack. ODF has done a fantastic job. They have a metrics of 94% fires keeping under 10 acres, and they've actually exceeded that. It's 98% now under 10 acres. But we know what's going on here, and the forests are getting drier, and they're getting more challenging because we're not managing them. So that's kind of the issue. I do not believe that we can cut their budget. The natural resource budget in the state is less than 1%, but we go after this every year. So somehow, I hope you guys can figure out how to juggle it and manage it properly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Neil Schroeder. Chairman, Co-Chairman Frederick and Co-Chairman Witt, I appreciate this opportunity. My family owns 300 acres of timberland in four northwest counties. And since we're talking a little bit about history and collaboration, I once tried to teach John Gerard some mathematics, and I think I was successful. I'm not sure.
Right. He's a doctor, so I think he'll be all right.
I happen to be president of the Oregon Woodland Cooperative. We are 70 members with approximately 30,000 acres of timberland represented. I'm a member of OSWA. I am on the budget committee of the Northwest Oregon Forest Protective Association. Since we're talking a little bit about history, my father, George H. Schroeder, was a logger, an OSU professor where he taught firefighting, among other things, and retired as chief forester for Crown Zellerbach. So you can see I grew up with this business. He was also instrumental in establishing the Forest Protective Associations. And now, talking about collaboration, that group of people has been collaborating for many, many years. And if you look at the stakeholders, the BLM, the Industrial Forest, the Oregon Department of Forestry, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, woodland owners, the federal forests, all of those people are part of the Forest Protective Associations. And Senator Gerard, if answering your question again about 33 firefighters who are suddenly not there, suppose we get an incident where we have a severe fire, we suddenly will have to rehire those 33 firefighters and retrain them, and we'll get them off the street probably, and they won't have the training that those original 33 will have had. So I urge you to increase the budget, don't decrease it. The results of a loss of forest industry jobs is also part of what will happen if we lose money here. So my concern is obviously to protect this source of clean air, clean water, recreation, clean soils, jobs, and income for many forest families. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for everyone's knowledge, Hampton Products is a very well-run organization. They had some very good foresight back in the 70s and the 80s, and you never mentioned the veneer plant that I helped build. So
I wasn't sure you wanted to go there.
So they were smart enough back in those days in the early latter 70s, early 80s to start acquiring timberlands, and they've kept those in very tip-top shape, and that's why they're here today and other people aren't.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Gentlemen, thank you both very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up, please, Jim James and Bill Cluding. Good afternoon to both of you.
Hi. Go ahead. Co-Chair Witt, Co-Chair Frederick, my name is Jim James. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, and I'm here to testify for two of my East Side members who could not be here today. First is Lyle DeFries, and I'm reading his testimony. My name is Lyle DeFries, 11956 Huckleberry Loop, Baker City, Oregon. I'm a member of the Northeast Oregon Department of Forestry Budget Committee and a member of the Eastern Oregon Forest Protection Association. I'm also a member of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Thank you for the opportunity to allow me to speak about the Oregon Department of Forestry budget. I asked the committee to support the 2013 Wildfire Protection Act, in which landowners agreed to put $3 million per year in landowner dollars from the Emergency Fire Fund to assist the Oregon Department of Forestry in firefighting readiness in exchange for $1 million for Eastside landowner fire patrol assessment relief. The $1 million in Eastside landowner relief is missing from the governor's budget. It needs to be part of the ODF budget as outlined in the Wildfire Protection Act. The rationale for this relief in 2013 is even more relevant today. I ask the committee to
reconsider the governor's priority in budgeting $4.4 million of lottery monies for the Department of Forestry federal forest restoration projects while neglecting to fund the other important fire and private forest items funded in general funds. It makes no sense to subsidize the federal government $4.4 million, then cut essential fire protection and private forest budgets. There must be a way to balance these priorities. The $1 million the governor stripped from the general fund budget needs to be put back to protect our private forest resources. The Eastside Forest does not have the ability to pay the increasing assessment expenses. On average, each 5 acres of my ranch, Timberland, has provided one 24-hour day of hunting and other recreation, free of charge, annually for over 20 years. I believe the public has some responsibility to help with fire protection costs. It is great that the governor supports the federal forest restoration projects. However, the adequate funding of fire and private forest projects and issues with the governor's budget was neglected. Should be a priority to maintain sustainable community and help rural Oregon meet its challenges. Thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you.
The other member is John Breeze, and his testimony is my name is John Breeze. My wife, Lynn, and I live in Prineville, Oregon, in Cook County, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to express our views on the ODF fire budget. Especially, we need the $1 million investment relief in Eastern Oregon fire assessments. Our family has raised livestock and managed timber on our ranch for over 100 years in Cook County. We have ties to this land and the values of Central Oregon. We want this property to continue as a viable ranch now and into the next generation of family. I have been on the Central Oregon District Budget Committee through the tenure of 3 area directors and 5 district foresters. I have been a director of the Eastern Oregon Forest Protection Association for many years and have watched the fire budgets increase at an ever fast rate. Now the rates have skyrocketed. Even after Central Oregon District has a relatively quiet fire season, the budget increase is very significant. We live in the dry side of Oregon. Timber grows slow and burns regularly. Central and Eastern Oregon fire budgets reflect that. There is imbalance between property taxes and fire protection costs. The rate relief was part of the Wildfire Protection Act that landowners saw is needed. The timber of Central Oregon cannot grow fast enough to pay the cost of an adequate level of protection. This is why the state legislature added $1 million to the supplement landowners with the protection districts of Eastern Oregon. The state of Oregon mandates timber supply now and into the future. We need the rate relief to our assessment. Thank you for your time. Also, if I have the opportunity, I'd like to comment on Senator Girard's question about the 33 fireflyers. I can tell you, when lightning strikes on your property and there's fire coming over the ridge, you damn well want those 33 firefighters on the job, ready to go to put out the fire like they always have been every year. And I would certainly encourage this committee to fund the Oregon Department of Forestry and at the fire and private division levels. It's to the best interest of the citizens of Oregon for the Department of Forestry to be well funded, and not at this, and the federal program, don't sacrifice the fire and private program for the federal program. It just doesn't make any sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Bill, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Witt, Fredericks, Committee for the Record, Bill Clooting, Carpenters Industrial Council. Let me take you back over 100 years. Oregon had experienced 1.5 million acres of forest fires. Department of Forestry was formed in 1911 to try and solve this problem. 1.5 million acres. They went to work. They had to draw up the plans. They had to work with the federal folks, private folks. And instead of getting a break, look what happened in the 30s, 1933, Tillamook Fire, 1939, Tillamook Fire, 1945, Tillamook Fire, 650,000 acres. Department of Forestry went to work. We're logging in those forests today. The Bandon Fire, 1936, 300,000 acres. They're logging in them areas. 1951 forward, they were 19 major forest fires, including the Biscuit Fire of 500,000 acres. Again, working with federal, state, and private land owners, they did their job. In my opinion, Department of Forestry is the only, Oregon Department of Forestry is the only forestry agent in this nation that could have got this done. They restored the burnt lands, put health back in our forests, recreation, and educate our Oregon citizens, and protecting our streams and wildlife. That's a big agenda, and they've done it. Our state forests are among the best in the world. Somehow, we've got to find a way to fully fund 5519 so they can continue to do their job. I urge this committee to urge the people that hand out the money to fully fund 5519. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything from the subcommittee? Bill, I know you mentioned the Tillamook burn repeatedly. Someday we'll have to have you back and you can tell us about Friday trees that were replanted on that property outside the Interpretive Center. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call back or call up, please, Ken Cummings and Rex Storm.
Co-chairs Frederick and Witt and committee members, for the record, my name is Rex Storm. I'm a forest policy manager and certified forester for Associated Oregon Loggers, representing over 1,000 forest contract service companies that grow, harvest, manage, and protect Oregon's forest lands.
Welcome.
Of all ownerships. Welcome. Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to comment on a couple items today concerning the Department of Forestry's budget. First, we oppose the reductions in the department's core forestry programs of fire and private forests. Funding and staffing cuts to fire protection and private forests are very disappointing, considering that these are very essential programs for which general fund dollars also generate matching private sector dollars. Our association and the forest contract sector works closely with the department in its stewardship foresters and fire managers to assure that contracted forestry programs maintain one of the most effective public-private partnerships in the nation concerning forestry's services and fire protection. These important programs are strongly supported by the forest sector, and as such, we oppose their proposed cut. The second item I'd like to cover is concerning the Federal Forest Restoration Program. We are supportive of that program. However, we encourage structural improvements of that program. Our association joined with four other forest sector associations in submitting a letter expressing our concerns in detail. But suffice it to say that we are supportive of the federal forest program's goal to increase the pace and scale of federal forest management. However, we believe that program in its 4 years existence has not demonstrated sufficiently adequate structural accountability that indicates additionality of where those state dollars actually generated more economic impact to the economy of Oregon. Let me continue. The Federal Forest Program investments, we strongly believe that those investments should not undermine those core programs in fire protection and private forests that I already mentioned. Those are essential, vital, foundational programs that we cannot afford to sacrifice. Next, the Good Neighbor Authority would be a more rational avenue for the Federal Forest Program to dedicate its priorities towards. We would encourage the investment in additionality. And additionality, what's that mean? Additionality of state dollars spent on a federal program should be able to be accountable of how that translates into the economy and positive revenue generation. Many of the reports that have been provided indicate less litigation, less analysis, or less this, less process. But ultimately, my experience as a collaborative member on two National Forest Collaboratives for almost 5 years now has been the process has not declined. The process is still lengthy, cumbersome, and quite frankly, the Federal Forest Management Program is structurally broken. And so I have a great concern of whether or not spending more on collaboration and getting folks together in a room will have anything to do with fixing and remedying those structural problems that exist. Additionality to us means saw timber volume at the mill, processed, managed, delivered to the mill, not timber offered, timber sold, timber that's had environmental documentation, because there's a significant amount of leakage between the Forest Service process of planning a timber sale and what is actually harvest. Significant leakage, and by, I'm talking 10, 20, 30, 40%. And so if we look at the actual sawlog harvest compared to prior to the recession, the five-year recession in the late 2000s, 2007 to 2011, look at the national forest harvest in eastern Oregon prior to the recession compared to national forest sawlog harvest after the recession, it's declined. And so we do not have good confident metrics that we feel we can rely on in terms of deliverable saw log harvest, which would generate economic outcome. So in closing, I guess I would encourage you to consider that state investments, in our opinion, should not be used to fill federal funding gaps, nor should they be used to replace federal funding responsibilities. We believe that state dollars are best spent on those core programs of the Department of Forestry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Witt, Frederick, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Kenneth Cummings. I'm here as chair of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee. I appreciate the opportunity to testify. As you recall, our committee is appointed in statute, or defined in statute and appointed by the Board of Forestry. And we oversee the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. As fiduciaries of that fund, we are charged with the supervision and control of the distribution of funds from there to equalize costs across fire districts in Oregon when we experience high fire costs, large fires that exceed the district capacity. I know the last couple of years have been difficult. I appreciate everybody's efforts in trying to figure out strategies around fire funding. They have been rigorously tested. As chair of this committee, I've had the privilege to work with ODF staff, our state forester, and continually trying to understand better ways to do business. And I can tell you that they are an effective and efficient organization. And when it comes to deployment of resources and precious use of capital, they do a great job. But it's times like this I need to remind myself, and I'd like to take the opportunity to remind all of us in the room what public policy says about fire and fire suppression in Oregon. Revised Statute 477.005 says, number one, quote, preservation of forest is the public policy of the state. 2A, quote, need for a complete and coordinated forest protection system is acknowledged and, highlight, the primary mission of ODF. So in my mind, the state forester's number one mission, not number two or number three, but number one, is to put out wildfire. And due to our unique history of building and maintaining close relationships between landowners and the state of Oregon, we enjoy, and I know you've heard that already several times, one of the most efficient and effective firefighting organizations in the United States, if not the world. And I won't go into some of the details. I've included written testimony, so you can reread some of this, but the Wildfire Protection Act of 2012 cataloged an agreement between the legislature and the landowners in Oregon. It was landmark legislation, and I would hope any budget going forward would absolutely adhere to all those principles at a minimum. The fund represents members of the Oregon Forest Resource Industries Council, Small Woodlands, a lot of folks you've heard today, and everybody in the state goes into fire season assuming that the department is operating at the most efficient level possible every fire season. From my understanding about this budget, we would leave 33, I think we've heard, seasonal positions off, 19 permanent positions, and I'm not sure, because I'm not an expert on the budget cycle here, about all the other potential. But as you know, the fire suppression system in Oregon is built on the militia concept, where seasonally we ramp up to the need as needed, and then we downsize accordingly to minimize costs across the rest of the year. One of the integral components of that system is highly skilled permanent staff that fit into various roles of three organized resource teams that go out under the incident command system to help run large fires. Their goal is to get in, get out, not spend a lot of time putting out a fire. And due to the aging of America, we are already experiencing the loss of top-tier managers with deep fire experience across the organization, which is only going to get addressed through succession planning and training over time. And currently, under this scenario, to experience more potential loss, 19 positions on the private forest side, with less people to rotate through various teams in times of high stress, is really not a healthy direction. One of the responsibilities of the fund is has been to ensure a continued and successful relationship with underwriters of Lloyd's of London. As you're aware, we enjoy the ability to have a, quote, one-of-a-kind policy in the world. We are rightly related to arguably one of the most powerful financial institutions in the world. I've personally been to London for 3 years in a row, 2014, 2015, and 2016, to visit with underwriters about our insurance policy and to express our appreciation for a partnership that goes back over 30 years and their willingness to continue in that relationship. Additionally, our visits have been laser-focused on telling our story of why we are still, quote, a good risk. And they should continue that program. This policy is essentially protecting the general fund and could easily have disappeared if not for the tireless efforts of our committee, the ODF staff that have been involved, and our associates, Willis of London. And as a reminder for a data point for you, in 2013 and 2014, we collectively, the fund and the general fund, paid approximately $7.5 million in premiums, and then underwriters in the insurance world paid out over $50 million in claims. Not a bad investment. That would have all been general fund liability in those 2 years, by the way. If we happen to have another bad year that results in even a small claim, it would be extremely damaging to have to go report to underwriters that even a small part of that story was due to reduced manpower, readiness, or any kind of capacity change. If we are ever perceived as a, quote, bad risk due to our own shortcomings in terms of funding, manpower, and so forth, I believe it would be the beginning of a very damaging and irreversible image for Oregon in the insurance markets. Taking lottery funds and shifting them toward non-essential ODF programs may sound good. Sometimes good can be the enemy of better. In today's very difficult financial climate, the better choice would be to ensure that core capacity within ODF is being met. And by that I mean, quote, the fire department is well-positioned and well-funded to keep fire small, protect Oregon's timberlands and the general fund from potential large losses. I'm going to skip an anecdotal story I have at the end of my testimony. You can read that later at your will. But my hope is that with your collaborative and huge depth of understanding around these budgets and funding issues, you'll look at the importance and recognize appropriate budgets for ODF and their core programs like fire suppression and how important they are. And I also appreciate long-term collaborative solutions are by definition harder to work on, but they will stand the test of time and best serve Oregonians. Thank you for the time and listening, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Subcommittee members? Rex, some of your message is contrary to a lot of the testimony that we've received regarding cooperatives. And as we're looking at budgets and a need to reduce budgets, presuming that there's no additional revenue, the Department of Forestry being the as large as it is becomes a focal point. So I need to drill down a little bit on what you said versus what a lot of the other testimony has presented. And one of the things that you stated without putting words in your mouth was that in essence the cooperatives have not reduced the time it takes to get a timber sale online. And so I'm wondering if it's the process that has remained about equivalent amount of time to go through the process, or have you included contested sales in your analysis?
Considering the full cycle of planning a national forest project, the structural requirements for the Forest Service to do all the analysis have not changed. Collaboration does not change that.
Yes.
In some of the experience we've had is the collaboration makes a recommendation, the Forest Service does not follow it because it has the structural procedural requirements
mm-hmm.
that I made reference to, that there's some structural breakage or structural problems with the agency. The other factor is it's created by the collaboration is it does not replace public involvement. So that if a collaborator is a person's not at a table,
mm-hmm.
they can still appeal, litigate, obstruct. The collaboration does not do away with that. It does. It has resolved issues on some forests.
Mm-hmm.
Some local areas, in some cases, but if you look across a broad geographic area of many national forests, there are differences. And so then you have to analyze what's the difference between Forest A and Forest B, Forest C. Well, what we're finding is the Forest Service itself gives preferential treatment in many, many ways, funding, staffing, and authorities to some forests that doesn't give to the other. So the Forest Service's own management bureaucracy and its strategic planning and management of projects, each forest is not treated the same. And so that creates the appearance that if you look at Forest A that is doing wonderfully with collaboration, is that because of collaboration or is that because it has additional funding and additional staffing, additional authorities from the Forest Service Regional Office?
Okay. And then in terms of output, trees harvested, logs sent to the mill.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, our earlier testimony suggested that, at least on the mail here, that collaboratives were in essence responsible for a de minimis volume, about, I think the figure was somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 million board feet a year I think it was 70 or 75 million board feet, but in my mind I think from nothing to a medium-sized sawmill output on an annual basis. If that is true, and you have suggested that over the course of the Great Recession, saw log production in what area? Is it east side Oregon?
If you look at either the Blue Mountains or all of eastern Oregon.
Okay.
Because the University of Oregon report was done, it compares the recession era timber sale and harvest versus today. Well, obviously you're going to improve from a recessionary comparison.
So is there would that then suggest that the cooperatives have been where it exists in the Malheur Forest has been highly successful, and where they haven't existed may suggest that it might be helpful to increase production.
I'm not saying that collaboration is not successful. What I'm saying is there's wide variations in the success, and it appears to us that the success is tied to things other than the state dollars.
Okay.
It's tied to how the Forest Service is managing particular national forests. If you take three of the national forests in eastern Oregon have produced collaborative successes. The other three have not. And so you have to say, well, what's the difference?
Yes.
Why is that?
Yes.
And the other three have actually declined. And so if you average all six of them together, you have a net either neutral or decline if you compare it to 2001 to 2007. They're still on a declining trend.
And if I remember correctly, there is a cooperative in the Blue Mountains as well.
Yes, every national forest in eastern Oregon has at least one.
Okay.
Some have more than one.
All right. Thank you. Well, that's helpful. Anyone else with some questions? Not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. Appreciate your – yes.
I digress just for 1 minute back to a question from Mr. Saperstein about ownership. I worked for Boise Cascade for 28 years on the west side. And in the late 80s, about 89, the United States Congress changed the tax laws and moved timberland assets into the same class as real estate. So in other words, like condominiums, malls, you know, big real estate type stuff. So that changed the tax rules around timberlands.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to public ownership of companies like Boise Cascade, who own mills and timberlands, there was an enormous pressure on Wall Street to unlock huge, huge understated values.
Mm-hmm.
And so there became the change in ownership patterns across the United States. And for the last 20 years, large public corporations have slowly had to bifurcate the mills and the timberlands to the point where today there's no one left standing. Weyerhaeuser was the last, and the last change in their ownership, if you paid attention, was to turn everything into a real estate investment trust. And so no longer, now a private company can do that, families, all that, but public corporations were under enormous pressure and was not gonna stand against that. So that's what happened over the last two decades, and I was a victim of that, like a lot of people, and it's changed, but just so you know, thanks.
The folks in Boston are very happy anyways. Thank you both very much. I have 3 minutes if there's anyone remaining from the public who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 5519 today.
Senator, I'd like to make a comment about the eclipse that I forgot to make. And
can you do it in 2 minutes?
Do it in 2 minutes. Again, Jim James, Oregon Small Wind Association. Related to fire, in August, you have all heard about the eclipse.
Yes.
There's going to be thousands of novices in the wood that don't have a clue about fire protection, and I think the Department of Forestry needs to be prepared for that, and they need adequate funding. Thank you.
And to remind us all what the fire conditions are like in August?
It's fantastic.
Very good. With that, I thank everyone for your testimony today. I think it was exceedingly helpful. I certainly appreciate the number of folks that have traveled great distances to be here for literally a few minutes of testimony. We understand the effort that you make, and it's greatly appreciated. Thank you all. I'm going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 5519, and I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you all very much. Adjourn the committee. Thank you all very much.